Well, welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are having a great time in actually dealing with and reaching out to people. I literally just got off the phone with I had to hang up. It was almost a three-hour phone call, and we got to do better as leaders in managing our time. There's no room for that length of a phone call, especially when what we need to be doing is you know, identifying tasks, identifying directions, and those types of things. And so anyway, but, you know, God bless the fact that we actually have other people in this country that are recognizing the importance of unifying. And so I'll get into the content of that phone call. But as I promised you that we would get into some marketing. And I've not had a chance because I've been kind of bringing you up to speed. I will tell you this, that, you know, I pray and ask for the Lord to give me an opportunity and give us, not me, give us an opportunity to start moving forward in focusing on compliance with the Constitution. The problem has been, for the past 4 years, we've had Trump in office. And people go, oh, well, no, he's done great things. I'm here to tell you, he doesn't have the authority and he doesn't have the power to do this. None of the things that he's done is permanent. Everything he has done can be undone by the next administration until we get the states to actually stand up and say, you can't do those things. You can only do these things that are enumerated in the Constitution. And so this is really, really important, folks. You have to understand that the only judges over what is constitutional and what isn't constitutional are the states. And as a matter of fact, before I get into the any obligatories, I need to read this. I've read this to you before. This is Madison's notes on the Virginia resolutions, and he wrote this in 1800. And you got to understand, the Virginia Resolutions was about violations of the Constitution that the federal government committed in the acts of sedition and the Alien and Sedition Acts is what they called them. There were four acts. And what he says basically is this, that where resort can be had to no tribunal superior to the authority of the parties themselves must be the rightful judges in the last resort, whether the bargain or the contract, anybody speaking here is the Constitution, made has been pursued or violated. The Constitution of the United States was formed by the sanction of the states, given by each in its sovereign capacity. It adds to the stability and dignity as well as to the authority of the Constitution that it rests on this legitimate and solid foundation. The states then, being the parties to the constitutional compact and in their sovereign capacity, it follows of necessity that there can be no tribunal above their authority. What he just said is there is no court, there is no set of judges above the parties of the compact, which are the states, very specifically the state legislators. You can have, doesn't matter if you have 500 legislators in the state of Vermont, that state only has one voice when it comes to the parties of the compact. When you pull the parties of the compact together, you only get one vote. This is very similar to the constitutional convention when the states had different numbers of people and they were able to affect different, you know, what do you want to call them, subcommittees, when they were working on issues. But when it came down to actual vote on whether they approved of something or not, the state got one vote, and that's it. In other words, the states were all equal parties, not based on people. Oops, and I'm sorry about that, folks. I obviously forgot to have my phones in a different room. So let me move forward. He says this, and in the sovereign capacity, it is a necessity of the tribunal above no other authority to decide in the last resort whether the compact made by them be violated, and consequently that as the parties to it, they must themselves decide in the last resort such questions as may be sufficient magnitude to require their interposition. So he's kind of alluding to the fact that they have to decide what level of action the states need to take. He goes on and says, it does not follow, however, because the states as sovereign parties to their constitutional compact must ultimately decide whether it has been violated, that such a decision ought to be interposed either in a hasty manner or on doubtful and inferior occasions. Even in the case of ordinary conventions, processes, he's meaning, between different nations, where by the strict rule of interpretation, a breach of a part may be deemed a breach of the whole, every part being deemed a condition of every other part, and the whole, it is always laid down that the breach must be both willful and material to justify an application of the rule. So, in other words, the states actually have to decide, you know, whether the federal government has willfully been violating the Constitution or whether they have, you know, been, and material, you know, have the violations been of such magnitude that they have to interpose, that they have to actually apply a resolution and or a solution, demand a solution be as such. In other words, as the states meet together, as the states look at all these violations, the states should ultimately decide this, that every department, such as education, energy, agriculture, commerce, all of these departments that have been created outside the Constitution in the perverse way, they've created these departments to actually usurp power. And so they're illegitimate departments, they're illegitimate powers, they're illegitimate roles and responsibilities that they have usurped. And so the states must actually dismantle all of these things that the federal government has no enumerated power on. As we go into Republic Review, you will find, and we haven't done this in a while, so we will be going through Republic Review between now and the end of the year, but you will find, if you read through the process, that it is recommended that no amendment be made to the Constitution to delegate to the general government any matters over domestic issues. And when I say that, I mean education, I mean energy, I mean things that are out there, such as housing, such as labor, things that actually go into the realm of the states and domestic matters, because the federal government was designed to focus on war and international trade and international agreements regarding security. You got to understand that governments are created with two principal directives. One is to protect life, and the other is to protect property. It is not for them to start creating religions. It's not for them to start creating, you know, these agendas and control every facet of your life, controlling every product that's being manufactured. There's one thing for them to actually create standards for copyright, standards for patents and those types of things, but not to actually dictate whether you can have those types of things. So to be clear, I'll be getting into what we call, you know, what basically I was just involved in this call. It's really good news. But what I want you to understand is that there are a lot of people that are recognizing and working in trying to pull together. And I'm humbled to know that I'm working with people like Bob Schultz and John Durash and Gerard. I don't know Gerard's last name at the NLA, but there are other people out there, as well as the Constitution Party and other parties that seem, and I believe, not parties, but organizations that I believe are coming to the table we have to start unifying. And everybody agrees on the fundamental basics that, one, the government in noncompliance is destroying not only our liberty, but the government itself. And therefore, we must, and the one thing we must unify on is compliance. We don't need to unify on our religious foundations. We don't need to, you know, unify on any other issue other than compliance to the Constitution. And so I think, and if you understand at the big level, you know, if your county failed because it's not complying to the Constitution and it's doing all of these corrupt things, if that happened at your county level, would that destroy liberty and freedom in America? No. What about your state? If the state of California fell because they went bankrupt, became insolvent because they were, you know, exercising so many communist centralized powers that they actually took over everybody's lives and so forth, would that destroy the liberty in America? No. It may suck to be in California at this point in time, but the reality and the fact of the matter is that even if a state falls, regardless of how big it is, like California, it will not destroy liberty in the world and liberty for us in this republic, in America. The only thing that will destroy liberty and republicanism and our Constitution and our government is if the United States government fails. This is why the focus has to be in forcing the federal government first into compliance. We do not have time to mess with counties and states in getting them into compliance. We need to be working succinctly on the real target, which is the federal government. We'll be right back after these two promos.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so let me get into the obligatories just so we can move forward into the marketing or into some of the news. But more importantly, I want you to understand that what we hope to be doing here is doing a lot less news and marketing. What we hope to be doing, and what I'd like to see within a platform, is where we can bring everybody together to help bring education to all of the different things that we need to address, and how republic review, basically republic review is the plunger of getting rid of all the corruption and all of the unconstitutional government But there are things that need to be done. There are things that need to be, you know, putting the court system back into scope of the Constitution, putting the representation back in, because one of the things that the NLA does is they talk about state committeemen and having county committeemen actually represented within the state legislature to basically identifying, you know, how the state legislators should be operating. But see, that's been obfuscated by the party. The party actually has these committeemen that go and, you know, engage the legislators on, you know, this issue, and that issue. Really, and I think what Bob Schultz is doing is brilliant, because he's actually trying to create a county organization that is, you know, helping maintain perspective on what the, you know, what government should be doing, what they're doing is unconstitutional, whether it's constitutional, and so forth. So anyway, I'll get into that conversation, but let me get through the marketing. As you know, the show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. This is the show that gets into the academic evidence of what we have to do. The other thing is I do want to thank you for tuning in and just remind you that we would love to grow the numbers as more and more people start waking up and actually smelling the coffee and recognizing that as nice as it was to have a president that we didn't really have to worry too much. I mean, come on, under his watch, the states stepped and trampled all over our liberties. How come the Department of Justice didn't drag in these governors and all of these other politicians that were taking, violating the Constitution? I have told you, they do not have the authority to mandate that you stay home, that you can't work. We have been decimated economically, psychologically. We have been decimated by our politicians who are violating the Constitution. And so we need to start waking up, folks. Anyway, let me get into some need-to-know news. And this is G. Edward Griffin. If you don't get this, go sign up for G. Edward Griffin's need-to-know news. And he basically, this is about the lockdowns. New lockdown measures are being imposed across Europe that include varying levels of restrictions that may include stay-at-home orders and curfews, closing restaurants and bars, cinemas, gyms, and other non-essential businesses. Some countries have announced the new restrictions will last for 4 weeks. Schools will remain open in most countries. A 430-mile traffic jam clogged up Paris Thursday night, just hours before the city was placed under a new lockdown. Did you get that? So, in other words, there were 430 miles of vehicles trying to get out of Paris before that lockdown. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said that he is sorry for the impact on businesses, but said the furlough system paying 80% of employee wages will be extended through November. He claimed that deaths could reach several thousands per day and would be worse than the death rate in April. And just remember that there is no evidence of the flu anymore. They're not reporting the flu anymore as of early this year. I think it was like February. All of a sudden, that's why I've said Trump has single-handedly gotten rid of the flu, or the politicians and the bureaucrats have now relabeled every death upon this biological warfare of COVID. Next one. G. Edward Griffin, riots began in Philadelphia on Monday night, and actually this was a while ago, after the police shot and killed Walter Wallace, age 27. Police say that the descendant threatened them with a knife and refused to drop his weapon. Video shows that the police told him to drop the knife at least two times before shooting. His family called the police because he was having a mental breakdown. So the only reason the police were there is because the family felt threatened he was wielding a knife and that somebody might get hurt, so they called upon the police. Wallace has an extensive criminal record, and I'm going to tell you something. because I knew about the terrible Taisha down in Riverside County. This was like the year 2000. This is when Sharpton and his goonies went down and shut down traffic on the Highway 91, which is a major highway that takes you from Riverside into L.A. They shut down traffic on that. But the point I'm trying to tell you is that when the police arrived, they already had the rap sheet on the individual because they already had the person's name. So when the police, I'm sure, same thing here, when they arrived, they already knew Wallace had an extensive criminal record and was first arrested in 2006 for assaulting a teacher when he was 13 years old. So they have this rap sheet already. You know, this guy is prone to being violent. Now, does that bias them going in? Does that make the police bad because they have this information? No. And as a matter of fact, if you were a police person and you were going in and you actually, you know, you knew the person by name, you would do the exact same thing. You would want to know what and how to respond. You know, how has this person been reacting so that you have greater caution? So understanding that this person has been actually physically assaulting and physically violent, you're already going in cued to, hey, this is going to get violent or this will escalate to violence very easily. Anyway, he was also arrested in March after he allegedly threatened his child's mother over the phone saying, I'll shoot you and that house up. And this happened in 2019. He was charged with resisting arrest by kicking the windows and door panels of a police car. And in 2016, during a robbery, he allegedly grabbed a woman by the neck and held what she believed to be a gun to her head, according to court records. So they had the background on this guy before they probably dropped him. They're going on. And in his rap sheet in 2013, Wallace's mother had a protective order against him, which he allegedly violated when he, quote, threw water in her face and punched her in the face, close quote, his mother, okay, and threatened to return and shoot her, according to the court records. So, you know, if you're that bad that you're willing to kill your mother, then I think that, you know, maybe the police would have, you know, this little, they'd be spun up a little bit, right? I mean, you just have, well, you know, the guy's probably turned into a monk, right? He's now religious and passionate about his religion. No, there's no evidence of that. And the reason why they come in this very specific way with this information is so that they know how to address and handle it. Anybody that thinks that the police should always get, you know, everybody's innocent until proven guilty. No, that's for the law to decide. When you're out there enforcing the law, you know, enforcing, you know, the laws that you can't be violent, you can't be threatening people, those types of things, then as far as I'm concerned, that's where you have, you know, the responsibility to do the due diligence to understand the threat you're actually walking into, because you don't want people to be killed unnecessarily. The victim, the assailant, nor the enforcement agency. Anyway, at least 30 officers were injured when the crowds throwing rocks and bricks at police. A female police sergeant was intentionally ran over by a pickup truck and was hospitalized with a broken leg. This is how the people in Philadelphia are responding, because they brought down this criminal. Folks, we've got a bad paradigm. And who owns this? Here's the question. Who really owns this problem? Anybody that propagates this idea that people are perfect, that law enforcement do not convict you. Their job is just to come in, basically arrest you so that you can be tried in presenting your case. It doesn't matter how peaceful or how violent you are. You need to go with them so that they can actually put charges on you and you're rid of habeas corpus and then go through the justice system. We are a nation of laws. And the fact that we have crowds that are decrying that we even have these laws, well, what are they going to do when all of a sudden people start taking things from them? This happened in Poland. I know, was it Poland? I believe it was Poland, where they went in and they took the property of the farmers. This was like in the 50s. And they gave it to these, you know, the minions, the people that didn't have anything. And so they took all the farmers' lands and then they divided it up and gave it to the people equally. And then when the people didn't know how to till their land, they didn't know how to plant the crops, they were unproductive, then the state realized, well, hey, you're not really helping us because you're supposed to be producing. They took that land back. Guess what happened? Those people who were given the land saying, you're stealing from us, when it wasn't their land in the first place. But they felt like they were now their property was being stolen. They didn't even think about the stealing of the property from those who rightfully owned it in the first place. That's the paradigm. And so I'm just trying to help you understand we've got problems. And what's it going to take to get you to wake up? We'll be right back after this.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional test to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's, and if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
So here's the bottom line to this story regarding these riots in Philadelphia, and this is happening everywhere, and I think the essence is this right here, what G. Edward Griffin is saying. Police were reportedly told to stand down during the ensuing riots. Many people were shot, mostly by other looters. Authorities took action only after finding a van filled with explosives. Black Lives Matter and Antifa vandalized and stole from many businesses. That's how they're funding their organization, by the way, is just hawking that stuff and selling it. Reporter Elijah Schaefer, who was beaten and threatened with a gun, says that he was attacked because he is white. In the advent of having this great Green New Deal coming down our throats, by the way, is, you know, what we're actually looking at. And so G. Edward Griffin's next article is going to be talking about that. But just to close on these riots and the police being stand down, we're being manipulated, and they're basically saying that, you know, government's not there to protect your property because you're keeping your property from being able to be used or helping others. In other words, government is enabling this riotous behavior. They're basically directing and ordering and orchestrating riotous behavior so that they can get away with taking your stuff and giving it to them. Just like what I was telling you, what happened in Poland. This is the direction that those in government want to do. This is what they're expecting from Biden at the national level, and they're expecting everybody that is a Democrat that is voted into power, they're expecting them to do this so that they can take away your property and even if necessary, your life, so that others may be able to thrive. The real lesson regarding that Poland incident or that Poland matter where they took all this farmland, the people that they gave the farmland to knew nothing about farming. No wonder they were inept and unable to produce. But the fact remains that they felt it was theirs because it was given to them. And in reality, nothing becomes yours unless you've earned it and worked for it and purchased it. But when government takes it, then government can take and choose and cherry pick who gets to win and who doesn't. This is why the framers created a system that kept a cap on government's ability to pick winners and losers, where there was a cap on anything and everything that government could do, which is why they created an enumerated constitution and not granting general powers like all other governments had had. Now, moving on, as I was just starting to say, that this Green New Deal is going to get rammed down our throat. And so, as J. Edward Griffin reports, the Ice Age farmer, Christian Westbrook, urges people to begin growing their own food due to looming food crises. And as a matter of fact, in the neighborhood where I live, I've actually seen a huge increase in people creating their own little plots of land for growing their own food. Food shortages are blamed on COVID-19, but he says are caused by the grand solar minimum, a period of least solar activity in the solar cycle that is known to ruin crops and lead to starvation at a very large scale. Tens of millions of people died during the last grand solar minimum events between 1650 and 1850. That was a 200-year period, due to the lack of heating and the lack of food. A rare windstorm in August in Iowa caused the destruction of 8,500,000 acres of corn. China's corn crop was also seriously diminished after a series of typhoons. Corn shortages will be felt in supermarkets, in animal feed stores, and in ethanol markets. In other words, if you're using corn as a part of your fuel is going to become more expensive than diesel, which it should be already. Diesel is the least processed fuel out there, and one would think that it would be the cheapest, but no, it's more expensive because government doesn't like you using diesel. Why? Well, because this new biodiesel technology, people have figured out that you can convert your fry cook oil into biodiesel. And so it's all about control. So that's one of the reasons why they punish you for buying diesel. But bottom line, if the alcohol that they're using as a supplement into gasoline is less available, then the cost of that ethanol going into your gas is going to drive the cost of your gas up. All about supply and demand, right? Westbrook suggested that weather warfare may be used to bring about the demise of the current form of agriculture. Customers are now competing. And how are they doing this weather warfare? They're manipulating the weather by this, what we call this topographical aerosol that they're putting into the air. And some people call that chemtrails. Actually, if you go research NASA plus TARFOX, TARFOX, you will actually be able to find the details of how NASA was doing this test study in the 90s with the University of Washington in understanding prevailing winds and how they could use spraying to basically, and in all honesty, what they're trying to do is they're actually trying to change the weather and or the sunniness or the warming, because there's an article out there that actually proves that what they want to do with all this aerosol spraying in the atmosphere is reflect the solar heat out of the, you know, off of the earth so that it doesn't heat the earth up to actually help cool us down. So in other words, if this solar minimum, which is kicking off, and we've got this topospheric aerosol spray, well, that could actually put us into even more dire danger. Do you think they understand this? Do you think they know? Of course they do. Because if all of a sudden they can control the food production and or the weather and those types of things and your ability to have successful crops, then they're in better control. It's all about control. Anyway, consumers are now competing with government that is stocking up on food reserves. Westbrook says that the sun's output is already dropping off, which accounts for the technocrats' aggressive timetable. He exhorted people to start growing their own food to prevent the food supply from being used as a weapon. And, well, they wouldn't do that, would they? This is how long they've been using food as a weapon, because Aristotle stated in his book Politics that revolutions are fought over two reasons: if there's not enough food, and when they realize that their government leaders are so corrupt that they're stealing the wealth from the people. Excuse me. Anyway, so he basically points out that, yeah, they're going to start using it as a weapon. And history actually proves this, my friends. They will use food and any type of tool possible, vaccinations, everything they can, to weaponize, to isolate you, to separate you, and if you are a problem, to get rid of you. Okay, the next story is about Minneapolis. Minneapolis officials are considering bringing in, now, so remember they were defunding police, right? So Minneapolis officials are considering bringing in officers from other jurisdictions to help the city's police department as they face a wave of violent crime and an officer shortage. Well, why is there an officer shortage? Because people quit, because they were defunding them. I mean, that's what they did. They wanted to reduce the police. And now they're asking for the other municipalities to support them. Following George Floyd's death, the majority of the council members promised to work towards ending the police department. Yet violent crimes have skyrocketed, as there have been 74 homicides in the city so far this year, compared to 48 for the entire year last year. In every case where cities have defunded police and cut police budgets, Democrats made the decision, which has resulted in crime waves that were completely predictable and totally avoidable. City councils acted rashly to appease activist mobs. It will only be very costly to make the city stable and safe again after throwing away 20 years of progress against violent crime and experienced officers. I mean, that's what happens when you actually get rid of those people who kind of know who they're dealing with. They know the process. Bottom line, I know there's a lot of people on the conservative side that look at, you know, backing the blue as just blind faith. Folks, we have to teach them that they have a responsibility to the Constitution, but two, we have to have somebody enforcing the laws. Now, I'm okay with the militia doing more and more work, but that means you'd have to do it, because the militia is who? It's us. I'm okay with that. But bottom line, somebody's got to do it, and we must enforce our laws if we are going to remain as a civil society. So anyway, we're going to get into a YouTube personality when we get back, and then we'll get into some of the things that we talked about in this phone call so that we can kind of wrap the weekend up with some good news and some good information for you. We'll be right back after these two promos. So as you can tell, I'm wrapping up a little bit earlier because the last two breaks, I cut it close. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so here we go. We've got a little bit more need-to-know news, and then we'll kind of get into, you know, getting organized and what the heck we've got going. J. Edward Griffin points out that there's this guy by the name of, what's his name, Shane Vaughn. And so he's apparently a minister and a YouTube personality. And so J. Edward Griffin reports this. The YouTube personality and minister Shane Vaughn explains that there is no law that requires a concession speech. And he's absolutely right. It is merely a custom to make the transition smooth. Now, see, here's something that is making news, but if you've listened to this show, when we went through the Constitution, we went through the Electoral College and the choosing of the president, we went into the details. If the Electoral College cannot vote for and actually elect a president, then it goes through as this whole process of going through the House of Representatives and then goes through the Senate and so forth. And interestingly enough, he's kind of helped clarifying this for other people, but even though we've already done this, but I think it's important because now you start really seeing the genius in what we have done here. And there we go again. You know, I meant to actually remove this from the office here, from the studio, but forgive me again. Anyway, YouTube personality and minister Shane Vaughn explains that there is no law that requires a concession speech. It is merely a custom to make the transition smooth because all claims for the office are terminated once the losing candidate concedes. Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Nevada will recount the votes, and Arizona is still counting votes. According to the 12th Amendment, which we have gone through in detail here, of the United States Constitution, if the election cannot be settled in court and cannot be certified with an indisputable majority, then what happens? Well, the election then becomes null and void, and the matter goes to the House of Representatives. At this point, the president will be elected by the House of Representatives. The Constitution stipulates that each state will have only one vote. So they really don't want this to happen. Pelosi is going to do everything she can to ditch this. Despite the House having 475 representatives, only 50 votes will be voting. 37 out of the 50 states in the House have a Republican majority. So the constitutional solution likely will lead to Trump holding office for a second term. Now, what do you think is going to happen when that happens? Will Trump actually start enforcing the Constitution and actually cracking down on these unconstitutional protests? Now, this is kind of an old story, but I think it's important that I bring this up because vaccinations are just around the corner. The UN recently admitted that new cases of polio have resulted in Africa from an oral polio vaccine developed with the strong support of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. William Engel questions why the Gates push is polio vaccines in Africa when many more lives could be saved, especially children, with investments in clean water and proper sanitation. He says Gates' motives appear to be linked to the Rockefellers who funded eugenics programs that funded the development of polio vaccines through the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis, also known as the March of Dimes. Engdahl makes the case that polio is not caused by a virus, but was initially caused by the pesticide DDT, a poison that affects the central nervous system that was widely used in the 1940s and 1950s. He wrote that the Salk polio vaccine was first deployed in 1955, which is 2 years after the dramatic decline in registered polio cases. Anyway, now, interestingly enough, there's been no evidence that's actually connected this polio outbreak or this reduction in polio and the DDT spraying. As a matter of fact, we were pretty close to eradicating it, and there's been no evidence that DDT has killed eagles and made their eggs soft, or all of these things have been actually, you know, laid out academically, and there's zero, at least I'm not aware of any real evidence that links DDT to causing those types of problems. And so DDT actually was very good at curbing and killing mosquitoes, and it suppressed, what was that, malaria, yeah. If you are capable of suppressing malaria, then you're capable of saving millions of lives yearly, because lots of people in third world nations, millions as I understand it, die on a yearly basis just due to malaria. That doesn't happen here because we, for the most part, you know, have eradicated that regarding, you know, the mosquitoes and the viruses and so forth. But anyway, let me get back to this meeting. So today we actually had a long phone call. It was basically 3 hours. And we sat down and we're talking about uniting and getting together. Folks, if we are going to get anywhere, we actually have to start conducting work. We have to actually start doing things. And one of those things is getting people to at least start getting the message so you'll know how to get engaged. There may be some things that you might like about one organization or another organization. If the end goal is the same, it really shouldn't matter what organization you get involved in. The end goal must be compliance to the Constitution. We all agree upon that. Bob Schultz, John Durash, myself, and I believe, I'm waiting for the Constitution Party to come to the table on this. I'm waiting for other groups to come to the table on this. I know the Constitution Association has. I'm waiting for the Eagle Forum to come to the table on this. I am waiting and waiting and waiting for lots of good organizations to make the decision. And I say that when I say good organizations, because these organizations are really trying to solve the problem. They're really engaged in trying to get work done. Of course, I'm sorry for the next interruption here. Anyway, long story short, we're hoping and we're pleading with you that you can actually start getting involved and joining these organizations and helping influence any organization that you can join and get involved with and say, hey, if it's not about compliance to the Constitution, then you're not going to be solving the problem. And I say that because over 90%, almost 99% of all of our problems are stemming, whether it be the economy, whether it be, you know, life, whether it be disease or anything. Over 99% of the problems, practically that, are caused because government is not compliant to the Constitution. It's doing things it has no business doing. And it's all about control, and it is doing everything it possibly can. Why is it that, you know, these vaccines, which it is out in the information to anybody, that you can see that what they're putting in these vaccines today is gene editing material to actually start changing you. The Pentagon was briefing this over basically a little less than 20 years ago. And so I'm here to tell you that we have to start getting engaged in getting everybody coming to the table and unifying. The only way we can unify is by following the framers' example. We have to set aside our differences. I don't care what religion you are. I don't care what demographic you fall into, male, female, race, ethnicity. I don't care. If you love liberty and you want to support the only document that guarantees liberty on the face of the earth, which is the U.S. Constitution, then we all have to work together in preserving that document and getting full compliance by the federal government first and then by every other vestige of government left in the United States. So one of the things that we're having to do, and I'm actually going to start doing this, is start creating terms and definitions. Not that, you know, I'm inflicting, I'm basically going to throw them out there so everybody can have their hack at it and basically say, what is a sovereign? Believe it or not, the definition of a sovereign is one of the biggest contended issues amongst a lot of conservatives, because if you're of the mindset that the people are the sovereigns and only, you know, God is the ultimate sovereign and the people are the sovereigns here on earth, then what you have is a democratic paradigm. Because in a democratic government, then the people are the sovereigns. But in a republican government, we have created representatives that and delegate sovereignty to them in very specific roles and responsibilities within those enumerations within the Constitution. And so anyway, we have to kind of boil all of this down, distill this down so that we can say, okay, yes, this is what we're supporting and this is how we're moving forward. We also then need to start identifying what are the states we want to focus on. And I've said this before and before and before, even all the way back to my book, The Strategies in Convening a Convention for Republic Review. Now, when I say convening a convention, convening the process, this is not an Article 5 convention. And I use that word, and I like using the word convention because it really upsets the John Birchers, because they want to label Republic Review as an Article 5 convention when it is the furthest thing from that. And if you read the distilled process, you will realize that Republic Review actually removes any and all petitions to amend the Constitution, because Republic Review is focused on enforcing the Constitution, not amending it. Anyway, so we need to identify what states and counties within those states that we need to focus on. And then we've got these other things that we want to be using as tools. And I've talked to you about those, grand juries, petitions, and so forth. But anyway, we're out of time today. We will be back. We'll be bringing you some content this coming week. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.